Hello, and welcome to ESL Etc. My name is Dave. Please check out the website at ESLETC.com. There you can find a bunch of materials and resources for some are just general ESL stuff, and a lot of them are aimed at bringing global issues and activism into an ESL classroom. So it's been a while since the last podcast, and I'm not sure what the podcasting schedule is going to be like from here on out. I've moved back from China, and I've got a new job. I'm currently the technology coordinator for the English Language Institute at the University of South Florida. It's a 40-hour-a-week job, which is unlike any of the previous teaching positions that I've held. So like I said, I'm not sure how much podcasting I'm going to do. Today, I'd like to talk a little bit about working online. Recently, I got some experience at a couple of different ways that an ESL teacher can do that. I'm also going to talk briefly about Dancing Rabbit, which is an eco-village where I spent 3 weeks right before I moved to Tampa. Then I'm going to talk about an activity I just did with my current students. It's a pretty basic job interview activity. One thing that I really like about it is the fact that it's zero prep, and I'm realizing that that type of lesson really appeals to me, and I'll talk a bit about why. I apologize if there's any sound issues with this show. I'm using a totally different setup than what I was using in China, so I'm sure it sounds different. I'm not sure if it sounds better or worse. And if I find that I'm doing regular podcasts, I can upgrade some stuff. Let me start by talking about Dancing Rabbit. I made a post on the blog about Dancing Rabbit, and it's a really great place. There's about 40 adults living there, although it's growing, and maybe 10 or so children, and they're basically trying to live as environmentally sustainably as they can. One thing that really struck me about the place is that they have a nice balance between pragmatism and idealism. You know, they understand that perfection is impossible, and so they're just kind of doing their best. And it's different. There's a lot of different communes that have these types of goals. For Dancing Rabbit, some of the defining things are their electricity. They're totally off the grid, so they generate their own electricity by solar and wind power. They have a couple of cars that they own as a collective, and that are biodiesel, which they would certainly acknowledge as well, is not an ideal solution. And they grow a lot of their own food, and they practice a lot of natural building techniques. So this is in northeast Missouri, where things like cob and straw bale make a lot of sense. So those are some of the dominant types of houses. Also, they do a lot with reclaimed lumber, so they'll do some demolition and then use that lumber to build a new structure. Anyways, as far as language teaching goes, they have a great website. It's dancingrabbit.org, and they have a lot of photos. They have some videos. They've got a DRTV thing where they're putting up short online clips that talk about natural building, talk about organic farming. They have a weekly email newsletter that's actually published in the local paper that is kind of a nice daily life kind of snapshot. And then they have a quarterly newsletter, which I really like, that has more in-depth articles about construction or other aspects of trying to live in a responsible, sustainable way. I think the newsletters, there's a lot of articles that could be used in an ESL classroom and really provide kind of a different angle on a lot of issues than are normally covered. I mean, the point of view of the people that are living there, it's a different point of view than what you get from the mainstream media, even though, you know, as the mainstream media, as time goes on, the mainstream media is covering more and more these issues. It's different when the people really live it, and it comes across in their writing, so I think it could be useful in class. So if you're interested, check that out. Okay, let me talk a little bit about working online. So I had two, between China and Tampa, I had a couple of online jobs, one of which I'm still doing. The first was I was an online tutor for TalkBean.com. As far as I know, they're hiring. So if you're interested, go to that website and apply. As far as I remember, they don't require a master's degree. So a bachelor's degree is probably fine and some experience. And basically what I did, I had a webcam and a microphone, and I would be available for 3 hours a day. And students in Korea would have 20 or 30 minute sessions with me during that time. I was paid $15 an hour. They said it was going to go up to 20, but I was only doing it for a couple months, so I don't know if it ever did go up to 20. The people that I was in contact with as far as the company goes were very forthright with me. I was nervous about an online thing. You know, was I going to get that first paycheck or whatever? But they were very nice. And from a pedagogical point of view, I don't know that it's a real worthwhile thing. I mean, 20 minutes, say two or three times a week of an online lesson, I don't know how much that really helps you to learn English, but maybe it's useful as a motivating thing for some students. Most of my students were business people, so they would have a 20 or 30 minute session before their workday, often at their office, and then they would start working. They have their own materials, and the materials are not, in my opinion, very good. Now, this will probably change. I mean, this aspect of the company, the English teaching aspect, is relatively new. So hopefully as time goes by, but in my opinion, the materials weren't great. The structure or the underlying software that they used was pretty cool, though. Basically, you could make a PowerPoint, and then you'd have this chat session that would begin with the student, and you'd open that PowerPoint in the chat session where you would see your face and the student's face on the side. Obviously, you're hearing the student. And then the slides are taking up most of the screen, and you can write on them, you can underline stuff, you can circle stuff, and it's actually a pretty good way to teach. I think for a one-on-one lesson, it's not bad. I don't think it has the capability of doing more than that. I don't think you could have a class of more than one student. But it's something to check out. It was interesting to me, and now that I'm working as technology coordinator, it actually is kind of a useful thing to have a bit of experience with online teaching. We've talked at the ELI about creating some sort of online courses, and I don't know if that's going to happen, but this is, at least I have a little bit of something to draw from as far as that goes. The other online job that I've been doing and I'm continuing to do is TOEFL rating. So this one you do need a master's degree for, and it's through ETS, so I guess that's Educational Testing Services, and it's all done online. I'm rating the speaking exam, the IBT speaking exam. And so what happens is either for a four-hour session or an eight-hour session, you're online and you're kind of constantly listening to these 30-second or 45-second responses to listening prompts and then giving them a holistic rating from 1 to 4. The training is pretty straightforward. You do the tutorial kind of at your own pace. Afterwards, you have to take like a qualifying exam. So you're rating stuff that's already been rated, and they're making sure that your scores line up. I'm not a huge fan of TOEFL. I kind of regard it as a necessary evil, but it's well done. I mean, they really do. I think they do a pretty good job of getting reliable or at least consistent scores. So, for example, each day when you, or actually each question, if you're doing a four-hour session, usually you're going to do two prompts during that time. So you would go for 2 hours, then take a 15-minute break, and then the rest of the time you're doing a different prompt. And at the beginning of each prompt, you go to what they call a calibration folder, where you're hearing, I think, 5 responses that have already been graded, and then you submit your rating, and you have to be pretty close to all of them or else they won't, or else maybe, I've never failed, so I think if you fail, maybe you get another try with a different sample, and then if you fail again, you have to call your supervisor, or maybe you can't grade for that day, I'm not sure, but, you know, it's one way of checking identity, right, because they don't want you to qualify and then just pass off your information to a friend who's going to do all the actual grading for you. But it's a really convenient job. I mean, it's $20 an hour, and you're paid for the whole time that you're there. You know, you're online for 4 hours. You're paid for that 4 hours. You don't need to do any prep. You don't need to do any grading. And so that's why I'm still doing it. While I was not working, I did it a lot. You know, I would do 4 hours a day or 8 hours. I did 1 8-hour day. That's pretty brutal. I mean, it's kind of numbing, it's kind of mind numbing to listen to 8 hours worth of 30-second clips and then scoring them 1 to 4. But you can do it. I find 4 hours to be a better number. And now that I'm working full time, I'm planning to do, the way it works is they have like a scoring session that's, I guess it's about 5 weeks long, and you submit your availability for each session. So you'll say like, you know, what days and what times on those days that you're interested in rating, and then they'll let you know what your schedule is. For me, I've always gotten everything I've asked for, so all the times that I've requested, I've gotten. I don't know if that's because I'm requesting unpopular times or what, but now that I'm working full-time, I'm just requesting, you know, maybe 2 or 3 4-hour periods for each scoring session, basically just to keep my name in there, because if you don't rate for, I want to say for 6 months, you have to qualify again and kind of reapply, which isn't a big deal, but I'd rather kind of keep it active, especially, and this is maybe not relevant for a lot of people, but for me, this would be a job that I could do if I were staying at Dancing Rabbit for a longer period of time, and so that is something that's in the back of my mind. I'm in my visiting position at the University of South Florida has a year contract beginning in August, so I'm committed to stay in Tampa for the next year, but I am open to other things afterwards, and so I kind of want to at least keep in this TOEFL rating until I've made up my mind that I'm going to stay here longer term, at least until I've decided I'm not going to go to Dancing Rabbit. So let me tell you a little bit about the ELI at USF. It's a pretty cool program. They've gone through a lot of changes. I guess I don't know the full story because I'm admittedly very new. But at least the top two people and maybe even the top three people were all eliminated in one fell swoop about 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 or 3 years ago, because of some financial thing. And my former boss from the University of Hawaii came in to replace as director, and she brought in another coworker of mine from Hawaii as curriculum coordinator. So the program is really moving into a project-based, content-based curriculum, which if you've listened to these podcasts before, you know is right up my alley. So that's really nice, and there's a lot of potential, I think, for interesting opportunities, both as a teacher and for our students, I think. People seem really committed and seem kind of passionate about what they're doing, which is nice. I've been spending the last, I guess, month or so, my first month here, getting the website up, and it just went up on Friday. It's if you're interested, it's eli.usf.edu. I'll put a link on the blog to it too. But I didn't design the website. They hired a company to design it before I was hired, and that company, I like some of what they did, but some of what they did is strange to me. Like, for example, the entire website was created in ASP, which is some sort of Microsoft proprietary, I guess it's a part of a content management system. I'm not entirely sure. But anyways, we can't run that on our university server. So part of what I've been doing is bringing it all into our PHP-based content management system. But I've also been doing a lot of reorganizing and kind of reworking of the content. And that's been it's been tricky because, you know, I'm brand new, so I don't know a lot about the program. So I'm kind of learning about the program as I'm going through this content. And so it's up right now, and I guess it's working. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of modifications that we're making in the next few weeks, but this has been a big time consumer for me, so I'm hoping that I'll get time to work on a couple of other things, although there's some more big projects on the horizon. So most of our students are similar to the previous place I worked, the Hawaii English Language Program. Most of our students are college aged, and they're wanting to study in America. They're not enrolled at a college, so this is a non-credit school on the USF campus. It's a pretty big program. Well, in my experience, it's a pretty big program. I want to say maybe we have around 160, 180 students right now. I'm not entirely sure because my classes are outside of the regular curriculum. I'm teaching our mini institute, which is kind of like an English summer camp. It runs basically for the month of July. Our students have 3 hours of classes every morning, and then they have activities in the afternoon. We're located in Tampa, so that's actually it's a pretty neat place, I think, when you're kind of promoting the recreational aspects of a school. You know, we've got Busch Gardens is in Tampa. You've got Disney World and Universal Studios and, I think, SeaWorld in Orlando, which is about an hour away. Lots of kayaking and beaches and outdoor activities. So they do a lot of that kind of stuff in the afternoon. Also, of course, they do some shopping. The mini students are younger. A lot of the students are teens, like, say, 14 to 18, which, I'll be honest, is not my favorite age. But the mini's going fine. It's, you know, it's kind of like teaching / entertainment. You're trying to, there's no grades, and there's not really any homework. And in a way, it's kind of rolling admission because different groups come for different weeks. So you can't really do any long-term projects, but it's been good, and this is one reason, in teaching the mini, this is one reason why I've kind of rekindled my interest in these kind of zero prep, any level activities. Now, I really started getting interested in those when I was in China because the classes were completely multi-level, the materials were either non-existent or terrible, and you didn't have resources like a photocopy machine so you could just make a bunch of handouts. And I like that. I mean, I realized that I had really relied on handouts as a crutch, where I would, you know, I'd go into a two-hour class with one or two double-sided handouts, and that eats up a lot of your time. And I'm not sure that it's the best way. Well, I'm pretty sure it's not the best way to use your time a lot of the time, anyways. And I like not having dead time. I like being able to just kind of jump right in. And so let me give an example of an activity because I actually just did this with both of the groups that I'm teaching for the mini. And so one of them is the advanced group, and one of them is an intermediate group. There's nothing revolutionary about this, but because a lot of the students are interested in either working or studying in America, I wanted to do like an interview practice activity, and I've had success with this type of activity before. So I framed it for a job interview, although in the actual execution of it, it was up to them. They could either interview for a job or interview for a school or a program. We started by brainstorming questions. So I asked them, you know, what sort of questions would you ask or would you be asked at a job interview? And in both classes, both levels, no problem at getting answers. You know, I probably ended up with, I don't know, 5 or 6 questions on the board. You know, about what's your education? Why did you choose this company? What's your experience? That kind of thing. I really like beginning discussion activities with brainstorming. It kind of gets people talking, and it means that the language that's on the board, both in terms of grammar and in terms of vocabulary, is going to be relevant to them, and it's going to be as level appropriate as it can be, because it's coming from them. And so, of course, I would tweak the grammar as it's going up, and, you know, I might talk a little bit about it if I thought it was something that was kind of at a teachable point. There's also a couple things that I would teach before we did the activity. So we're brainstorming, I've got the questions on one side of the board. On another part of the board, I would teach something about the term benefits. And I did this in both classes, and both levels seem to be able to understand this. And one of my classes in particular, the lower level class, is also a younger class. There's a bunch of 14-year-olds in that class, and this worked with them. And my other class has a lot of guys, you know, maybe 50 years old. So this activity worked with both groups. So we talked about, you know, what are the different kinds of benefits that you can get. So we talked about health insurance and all that stuff. One reason I do this is to teach vocabulary. Another reason why I do this is to teach culture, especially in the advanced classes. You know, you can introduce the idea of the difference in vacation time between America and a lot of other countries. You can introduce the fact that we don't have universal health care. And cultural things like that can be interesting to talk about, too. The other thing I taught is part of the pre-discussion activity is about which questions are illegal. And one reason why I do this is to be informative, but another reason is I've just found that people find this really interesting. I remember talking about this ages ago in a class, and students are just shocked by the fact that you can't ask age and you can't ask if someone's married, because in a lot of countries those are essential questions. Those are every job interview type questions. So we talked about that. Then I had students get into pairs and do an interview, either a job interview or a school admission or program admission interview. As they were doing it, you know, I walk around, I listen, I'll talk to them if they have questions. If they're like searching for a word, I might suggest something. I don't stop them and make corrections while they're in pairs, usually. I might, if they made the same mistake a bunch of times in a short span, especially if it's a pronunciation mistake, then I might. But I try to let them go and just kind of enter as requested. And as I'm listening, you know, if I hear someone ask a question that I really like, I'll write it up on the board or use some vocabulary that I want to make sure everybody knows about. I'll write it up on the board. I also add this topic on the board of difficult questions. Questions like, what's your biggest fault? Why did you leave your last job? Or how would you handle some tricky situation? Something like that. And then I gave them a decent amount of time. I've been really letting them go as far as if they're talking, I'll let them keep going. So I gave them about 15 minutes. It could have been closer to 10. And then I talked about the difficult questions that I had written on the board. And together we kind of talked about, you know, what's a good answer? If they ask you, why did you leave your last job, what's a good answer to that question? And that's something that if you wanted to, you know, you could shuffle them into groups and have them discuss and come up with answers to those questions. But in both of my classes, this was the last activity of the day, and so we were kind of winding down. So I didn't do a real follow-up activity other than to just kind of talk about those tricky situation kind of questions as a class. So I really like those kind of activities where, you know, you can go with it in almost any situation, and it's going to work pretty well. And I want to put together a collection of those. Another one that's good that I actually introduced on Friday for homework, and homework is a little grandiose, but anyways, we're going to do it on Monday, is Who Gets the Heart, which I mentioned on a previous podcast, and I'll put the materials up with this podcast too, where students assume the role of doctors, and they have a collection of patients, and they're deciding among the patients who's getting the heart transplant and why. And then I'll group them first by on the like teams, I guess. So if they agree with the people, they'll be together, and then they'll brainstorm and come up with reasons, and then we'll do a kind of a debate or group presentations or something like that. I've done other kind of activities that kind of fit this mold. I did a bunch with role plays, and so I'm going to try those. That was something I really started using in China, like, you know, you're a tour guide, and you've got some difficult guests, and you've got a role play making their complaints to the desk clerk, and they can practice kind of the different levels of politeness as the desk clerk gets kind of annoyed by the tour guide. So I think I'm going to try some of those with these groups too, because role plays are something that there's something that makes me nervous as a teacher. Like I really didn't want to do them. I thought they would people would just kind of look at me funny if I was asking them to, you know, act and wouldn't say anything. But they actually worked really well in China, and so I want to get that same confidence that they'll work well in this teaching situation, because it's good for me as a teacher to have as many tricks in my bag as I can. Because I can, you know, in hindsight, I can look at how I was teaching in Hawaii, and, you know, there was this core of activities that I just used all the time because they worked, and I was afraid to try new things. And I think that the more that I can do that, the better teacher I'll be. That's all I wanted to talk about this for this show. Like I said, I'm not sure what the schedule on podcasts is going to be like. If you have activities, these kind of... What I'm thinking of are activities that can fill, say, a 50-minute period that don't have any prep, and that can work with all sorts of classes. You know, classes that are mixed in terms of native language, classes that are multi-level or at least different level classes. If you have anything like that, I would love to hear about them. So you can email me at eseletc@gmail.com. Oh, one last thing before I go. I subscribe to a few email lists about global issues and social justice in ESL. And on one of them, a guy posted about a planning book put together by, I'm not going to remember the exact name. It's something like the Radical Teachers of New York or something like that. It's a teaching collective. But it's a planner that is aimed at teachers that want to bring social justice issues into their teaching. So it's got some activity ideas. It's got important dates in social justice, with the idea being that you could incorporate those events into your classes. Now, I haven't seen the book, but I'm planning to ask my mom for it for my birthday. It's not very expensive. I think it's $15 if you order it by August 1st. And the other thing is, I've never used a planner before, so I'm not sure if it's going to be useful for me. I'm hoping that the activities are good, because I don't use a planner. I usually type my lesson plans in a text editor, and that's about it. And I only do that because I just scrawl them on the back of some paper that's been used on one side. But I want to have a record of them, so I've taken to typing them as well. But for teachers that use planners, I would say definitely check this one out, because it's got added features than a regular planner. But for me, I don't know. I'd like to see it, but I don't know how much I'm going to really get out of it. If you're interested, the website it's available from is justiceplanbook.com, and there are no spaces or underscores or anything like that. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. Please check out the website at eseletc.com. If there's any topics, like teaching-related topics, you'd like me to talk about, or any questions you have, I don't know that I could. I don't know that I can answer questions necessarily, but I can give my take on them, and I can ask other people to give their take on them too. All right, and until next time, bye bye.